Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Crime, LGBT thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery, and I'm your host today, Al Warren. So today we have a sci-fi writer, and let's just find out what he's all about. Mr. David M. Kelly, thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Alan.
I see your history. You've got quite, you've had quite a life. I mean, it says, singer, bass player for a heavy metal band, and you were a crew chief for a drag racing team. Now you're a sci-fi writer, and wow, that's, I'm sure you've never had a boring day in your life.
I'd like to say that I haven't, but, you know, I mean, it looks good on paper, but, you know, I mean, the reality is, very different. You know, there's always kind of like days when things aren't going well and you know, you're not too happy with things. But overall, yeah, I mean, I've got quite a bit of a varied background.
Yeah. So how would you go from doing those things? Like that's quite an array of life experience, and you take that, and now you're writing like a science fiction.
I think it kind of works quite well, because having had, you know, these different experiences and met all of these different people and kind of interacted with different people in many different ways, I think that helps kind of inform, you know, things like building characters and you know, kind of like how they're going to react to certain circumstances. And it helps me to, you know, make them more sort of fully formed and three-dimensional, which is quite useful.
So your characters and the things that they go through and how they behave and interact. So are you picking that up off of your own experiences, like from people you've met and things that have happened that you've seen happen, and maybe how people, you know, reacted to those things?
Yeah, very much so. It's, you know, it's a mixture. It's like some of the things are kind of, you know, just obviously kind of like made up. But, you know, a lot of them are at least informed by things that I've seen or experienced or been through with other people. And some of the things are also just kind of, you know, parts of me and how I would react. You know, it's all about putting yourself into the perspective of the individual character.
So when you sit down to write a book with a science fiction theme or fantasy theme kind of idea, do you start out with like a question or something, some event, or do you start out with a character and build it around them?
I usually start with a character and a set of circumstances and then build from that. I don't do a great deal of planning up front. I'm more of a kind of exploratory writer. So basically I start off with an idea of the character and the scenario, and then kind of like throw them into it and see where it leads us.
You've got coming out here June 7th, you've got the book two of Logan's World, and it's Quilingxing Dawn. And yep. So when you have this world, this Logan's World, so you've had a book one and you sort of have planned it, and you start it with characters. Are your characters kind of in control of you, or are you in control of them?
It's a little bit of both, but the characters do have a tendency to dominate at key moments. I kind of let them have free rein most of the time, and they kind of do what they feel like they want to do. And I try to apply guidance where I can, but it's like a lot of the time it's very much a kind of learning experience for me. It's like, and things happen that, you know, I know it sounds strange, but it's like things happen where, you know, I'm surprised at what ends up happening and kind of like think to myself, I didn't expect that.
Now, you know, for a non-writer or a person that writes, you know, nonfiction like myself, I always ask that question because I get so many different responses, and it seems very bizarre. But so how do you experience your characters? Is it visual or is it voices? Like, how does this work for you?
It's mainly in terms of voices. I kind of hear the people sort of saying things and saying how they want to do things. And I kind of like, I document their choices in a way. So yeah, it comes very much from them. But as I say, it's kind of informed by all of the kind of like experience I've had with people over the years, you know.
Well, and so with hearing these voices, do you ever wake up in the middle of the night with mud on your shoes and a shovel by the bed?
No, I've never had that particular circumstance happen, but I have to say, quite often, as I'm writing a book, it's like I actually dream events that are then in the book later on. And I have, for instance, in Quilingxing Storm, the first of the Logan Two Feathers books, the whole kind of last third of the book essentially came to me in a dream. And I kind of woke up the following morning and had this whole kind of idea of how this was going to end, and it was like, you know, get it down as quick as possible before I forget, you know.
Yeah, that's really it's another one of those that I still can't figure out. So when you first get the idea for the character or the book or kind of what you're going to do, like for instance Logan's World, the very first book, when it's first coming to you, do you kind of like have a picture in your mind of what it's going to be and kind of where it's going to happen and how it's going to end type thing? And you kind of know that and then you fill in the details, or is it totally just day by day and you get the information and write it?
In Logan's case, it came about in a slightly different way because the Logan's World series is a spin-off from an earlier series of mine. The Joe Ballin series, and Logan was originally a friend of the main character in that series. And then there was, in one of the later books in the series, he was very much a key person in this kind of rather big development in the book. And after that happened, I kind of realized that I needed to kind of tell his story. So I had sort of some of the characters' kind of makeup already in place, as it were. And that event that happened in the sort of in the Joe Ballen book is kind of the trigger point for then the Logan's World series. So I had that initial Sephir from those earlier books. And I developed it from there. But usually when I'm kind of starting completely from scratch, what I will do is I will kind of develop the kind of key characters that I want. I'll kind of like make an outline of them. And I'll kind of like very, very sketchily mark out the sort of the setting and the scenario and the sort of major kind of ideas that I want to include in the book, and then go from there. But it's like they say about you know, battle plans, it never survives contact with the enemy, so that they always change.
yeah it's never what you start out to be, but
no.
I now, you have not been, if I'm correct, a writer your whole life. This hasn't been something you've been writing these books since you were six type thing and doing this. So it kind of came along after other things. But this whole lifestyle of you with characters and voices and the way you're assembling these stories and dreaming and imagination, it's all really cool. But did you have this years before you ever got into writing, or is it something that just started?
Oh no, it was a long time kind of coming. I was very much an avid reader when I was young. I kind of read sort of like through kind of like a couple of libraries when I was in school, and I always loved books and reading, and I always wanted to try my hand at writing, and you know, kind of life kind of like takes its own sort of like turns and its own paths, and I never seriously kind of took it on for quite a long time. And then many years ago, when I lived in England, I took on a job, and I had an extremely long commute by train, which was like an hour a day each way. And I wanted something to do on the train. And I sure wasn't going to work during those 2 hours, because I wouldn't get paid for it. So I thought, I'll do something for myself. And my thoughts turned back to kind of like this idea of writing, which I'd always wanted to try my hand at. And so that's when I started writing, and I ended up writing my first novel, which is not published and hopefully never will be. But that was kind of like the thing that really got me hooked, and I've been writing ever since. Although it did take me a long time after that point to get to the stage where I felt that what I was writing was actually publishable.
Yeah, it can be a long process. It's different writing for yourself compared to putting it out where everybody can read it, and especially in today's world where so many people have almost instant access to you, so you can get a lot of comments and a lot of people saying things about your writing that, you know, never used to be. So it's a different time. It takes a little bit of courage now to put out a book.
Yeah, it does. It's, you know, I mean, when you write a book, I mean, there's always a part of you, you know, within that book. And depending on what you're writing, I mean, that could be quite, you know, a sort of an important part of you, or it could be a lesser part, but there's always part of you in that book. And so, you know, when you put it out there in the big old world, you know, it's like you've got to be prepared for whatever people say. And sometimes they say things that, you know, aren't particularly nice. So,
oh, yeah. You know, and it's the worst thing in the world if you express a feeling or an idea of yours in a book or a short story, and then someone goes, well, this is terrible. Or they say something really mean, and you're like, oh, well, thank you. You know, it's kind of, it can be devastating at times. You have to build quite an armory, a second skin to kind of you know, get through that, because it can really affect people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you need to have a tough skin if you're going to, you know, be a writer or anything. I think, you know, if you're kind of like somewhat in the public domain, I mean, there's always going to be people out there who are going to start trying to knock you down.
Yeah.
It just seems to be a part of life that we have to deal with. And so you have to be prepared for that, and you have to be kind of mentally tough enough to deal with that and rise above it.
Oh yeah. I used to be devastated like 10 years ago when I got comments or people saying things. I would be so upset. And now I've kind of taken the Andy Warhol, someone says, you can't write and it's terrible. And it's like, yeah, you're right. I can't. I am terrible. Or I do the old, you know, I don't come to your job and slap the sailor's cock out of your mouth. So don't come tell me how to do my job type thing. So I kind of have developed this snapback at people, because it's just, you know, if someone has something good to say or something that about how something made them feel or something that you can learn from, that's great. But just the old sort of slash and burn comments are just, you know, terrible. But
yeah, they're hard to deal with. Yeah. I tend to just try and ignore them and just, yeah, move on. Oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah. You don't want to, if you focus on them too much, it takes you away from the heart of writing or what you're doing or your story. Because if you start thinking about these things, you no longer are focusing on your art, so to speak. So it's not a good thing to do. It's better to avoid it. When you write these stories, like, okay, so there's a lot of entertainment and there's science and there's all these thoughts going on at the same time, and that, is there like a subtext or perhaps a theme or something you want people to get other than the entertainment and all of the fun stuff on the top end of the story? And you know, and this is something that could happen organically. It might not, you know, it's not like you're sitting there trying to give an opinion, so to speak, but it just sort of happens with the characters. Is that sort of something that people can get out of your books?
I find most of my books tend to have themes behind them, but I don't actually set out with a theme necessarily in mind. They kind of emerge sort of almost sort of like as a byproduct as I'm writing. It's like I don't kind of sit down and think to myself, I'm going to write a book where I set all the rights in the world.
You know, that'd be a really long book.
Yeah, you know, it's like, you know, I don't sort of try to sort of, I don't know, sort of beat people over the head with kind of like righteous themes or anything or ideas. But there are themes kind of that develop naturally through the telling of the story. And, you know, I mean, it's one of these things. I mean, sometimes you write things and they are actually a reflection of you. But I mean, other times you write things and you know, not necessarily a reflection of you, you know. It's the same with characters. Some characters I look at and I think to myself, you know, it's like, yeah, I can definitely see some of my DNA in that character. But then there are other characters, not necessarily, you know, kind of the sort of bad characters, but, you know, I look at them and I think, yeah, there's not really much of me in that one at all. But, you know, you kind of like, you have to at least gain a sympathetic understanding of people with the other viewpoints, you know, that aren't necessarily yours.
Now, it says in your bio that you sort of fell in love with space and science fiction kind of back when you watched Neil Armstrong and the moon landing and all that, walking on the moon. You do realize that didn't happen, right? I say that because we had the flat earthers on the show and I was just like, yeah, it's just crazy. And, you know, so, but that sort of started it, and you kind of write like in these, you say they're near future sci-fi thrillers, right? So, and you kind of do plausible science, but do you ever worry about you're trying to be a plausible, like a reasonable scientific theories in the books, but being near future when it happened, you know, when the future kind of comes up on us, do you ever worry that it, something you say might not be real or might not happen or couldn't happen or?
I don't worry too much about things not coming true exactly the way I've written it in the books. I think if you started sort of trying to, dull guess yourself like that, you'd very quickly end up not being able to produce anything. I chose deliberately to kind of like keep at least the initial books fairly kind of like close in the relatively near future, because I wanted to write about stories and people that, you know, were very easily relatable to people now and not kind of so far in the future that, you know, their societies and things that were happening were almost unrecognizable. So, you know, that in itself is a deliberate choice. What I actually am finding kind of a little bit more scary and a little bit more worrying is the number of things that I've kind of put into my books in the near future that sadly seem to be coming true even quicker than I had imagined. A lot of the things around sort of like, you know, the environment and what have you, the kind of, you know, we're starting to see them now. And, in my books, it's like, you know, I'm kind of like talking about these things kind of maybe 150 years from now. And it's like, but we're already seeing the kind of the signs now. And that's kind of worrying.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and are you ever going to deal with any sort of pandemic or viruses or, you know, monkeypox or anything strange in your books? Or, you know, is it too close to what has happened that you're going to stay away from it?
I think it's a little bit too close. I try to do things that are kind of different and not what people might necessarily expect. And so I think, at least for me at the moment, that's probably a little bit too close.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean to say that I wouldn't necessarily write something along those lines, you know, in the future. But for now, I think it's a little bit too close. And quite honestly, I don't know about anybody else, but I'm kind of tired of, you know, monkeypoxes and viruses and.
Well, yeah, it's a bit cumbersome. It is. And it's because it's daily and it's only been a couple of years, but it seems like 20 years.
Yeah, it's been a long time, you know, and here we are kind of, you know, sort of 2.5 years kind of like later, and we're only really starting to see the first signs of things, you know, shifting somewhat back to normal. And, you know, that's a long time.
Yeah, yeah. It certainly seems like forever, but I also see, okay, this is my kind of story too, cynical humor and that sort of thing, because that's who I am. And I've been called a lot of things because I am so cynical. I'm so, and I like satire. I like that sort of thing. But like myself, I get quite often called colorful and different things. But do you worry? Or not worry, but you have to be careful because there has to be a timing, like humor and cynicism and satire and all that. It's got to be in the right place at the right time, or it can really fall flat, right? It can not work, or you could trigger someone, so to speak, as they say. Do you have to actually be conscious and really think about your kind of humor that you put in the book?
As I'm writing, I tend to be pretty much open to anything. And I will, like, at least in my first draft, I will kind of throw in sometimes some of the worst and sort of darkest kind of jokes you can imagine.
Yeah.
But then as I revise, it's like I'll kind of like look at some of them and I'll think to myself, yeah, okay, that's maybe a little bit too close to the knuckle. That's maybe not quite where we want to take this at this point. And I also am very fortunate in that my my wife reads my books, and she's kind of like my one of my editors, and she has a very good sort of like sense of, you know, kind of like whether something's worth including or not. And so between us, we usually kind of like manage to find a fairly good balance. You know, there are things, sometimes she'll just tell me outright, you know, yeah, you can't include that. You know? Yeah. and I'll kind of like go, well, and she's usually right.
Yeah, well, you know, and the thing is, because it's a pretty sensitive world right now. People are very conscious, and everyone's kind of over cautious sometimes. I think people are scared to a certain extent to sort of just say things kind of how they are without, you know, thinking they're going to upset someone or hurt someone or offend someone. And it's not right to be mean and hurt someone and all that. But sometimes we've got to have some adult humor and stuff, right? I think personally.
Yeah, I would agree. And I also agree. I think that we've kind of like tipped a little bit too far into the kind of, you know, sort of, we can't upset people. We can't say this because somebody might get triggered or, you know, so on. I mean, a lot of books nowadays, they've started including trigger warnings in the description. It's like, you know, caution, this book contains things that, you know, such as whatever, you know, I don't know exactly. And I just refuse point blank to do that because, you know, it's like, I mean, I assume, you know, I'm writing for adults. And so I assume that you can kind of like understand the difference between, you know, kind of fiction and reality. And this is a piece of fiction, you know, no people were harmed in the making of this book.
But they will be now, you know. But you know, on the trigger, you know, it's funny because, you know, true crime, a lot of what I write sells like crazy, and people are really into it, all the true crime shows and murder and all this stuff, and I'm thinking, and yeah, they're sensitive.
Yeah.
it just doesn't, you know, like I gotta sit down and watch my favorite Discovery murder shows for a couple hours, and then someone said something off color and it's, oh my God, I'm so upset. That's sort of, it doesn't correspond with me. I don't get it.
Mm.
But hey, then nobody cares about me. So
yeah, it's true. I mean, I just happened to notice a post on social media last week by one of my longtime fans. And, I won't go into the details, but it just kind of like made me realize that in one of my books, there's a part of that book. And I thought to myself, wow, how is she going to deal with that based on what she just kind of posted? And so I contacted her privately and just, you know, very gently sort of warned her. I didn't tell her the nature of what it was that, you know, I thought might upset her. But I just kind of like thought, you know, well, I better do just in case. And it was kind of interesting because, you know, she her response was like, you know, I'm an adult. It's like, I know the difference. You know, it's like, this is, it's a book. You know, I'm yeah. not, you know, that's not going to kind of like hurt me. It's a book. It's not reality.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of what I mean. It's kind of a little bit, you have to be cautious because you don't really know what to expect.
Mm.
You know.
Yeah, and it is a valid concern. I mean, like you say, I mean, you don't set out to deliberately hurt people with these things, but at the same time, you know, I mean, you can't just sort of like, you know, live in this kind of happy sort of peppy sort of Sesame Street world forever, you know.
No, it's not gonna, you're not gonna survive. There's a real world out there. So, you know, but So when you say that you're not really outlining stuff, and like this is book two, do you know how many books in a series you're going to do, or how many parts to the series you're going to complete? Because it seems kind of random in a way.
Absolutely no idea. Okay. The it's interesting you mentioned that the Joe Ballen series, which as I said was my first series, that originally was going to be a standalone book. That was it, just one book and done. And as I was kind of writing and editing the first book, I realized that there was more to this story. And so then I started working on the second book. I wrote the second book and I was editing that. And down to a suggestion by my wife, I made a very, very small change, at least in terms of that particular book, to the ending, which I completely agreed with. But, you know, it was actually my wife who made the suggestion. But that was in editing. And as a result of that, I mean, I'd already started writing book three because I realized that there needed to be a third book. But I had 75,000 words written. And suddenly this one slight change in book two completely invalidated all of what I'd written in book three.
Oh.
So then I had to rewrite completely book three. But that meant that I ended up, because I still needed to finish off the whole series, I realized. And so I ended up with having four books in that series. The Logan's World book similarly was going to be just like a one-off. And then again, I kind of got to the end of it and realized there had to be at least one more. And then as I was writing the second, I realized, yeah, we're still not going to be done. So there's going to be at least a third. I doubt there'll be a fourth, but you never know.
Yeah, and don't be writing ahead of time in case the wife gives you some change. And then, I mean, you could always fall back and say it was all a dream.
You know? Yeah, I'd rather not.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's a good move for anyone. But when in doubt. He woke up in book three. Yeah, no, it's insane sort of thing. Do you go back to older books now and reread them or look at them now and kind of go, ooh, and then because it's my belief that each time we do a book and you complete it and it's out there and then you move on, I feel there's a certain amount of knowledge you get, or there's a certain amount more of ability in writing. Different tools, let's say, you become a better writer. And so when you go back to something that you did, you know, five books ago or even longer, sometimes you can notice things that you would do differently now. Do you ever sort of, does that ever come across to you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, from the first book I released, I mean, I've always been kind of a bit of a perfectionist. I try to make them absolutely as, you know, as good as I possibly can. And I mean, that's what you do. You're always, you know, you're always proud of the work that you do at the time that you do it. But I mean, yeah, it's always a learning experience. And so, you know, as you know, you kind of like develop your skills and, you know, you get better at developing like characters, plot, all this kind of stuff. I mean, you inevitably will look back and I certainly have, and I've looked back and I've thought, wow. I wouldn't write that like that now.
Yeah.
You know,
makes you want to change it, but that's an endless process because that'll never stop then if you keep doing that. Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, you have to accept that that was kind of like, you know, the best that you were able to do at the time. And you have to move on because otherwise, yeah, you would get nowhere. You'd just constantly be revising.
I'd be rewriting every day.
Yeah, it would be the Sisyphean equivalent of writer's hell.
Yeah. Well, so someone that had never heard of you before, hard to believe, but if there's someone out there in this world that doesn't know that doesn't know David M. Kelly. Besides, okay, the new book that you're focusing on to sell, what one book would you say you got to read this book in order to know who David M. Kelly is as a writer?
That's always a tough question. It's kind of like, you know, who's your favorite child?
It depends on what they're doing that day, right?
Yeah. Probably I would say that the Joe Ballin series is kind of more me in terms of the character and the character's humor and so on. So probably I would say the Joe Ballin series. It's a tough old question, you know.
For sure. I like putting people on the spot with that. Well, you know, because it is a tough one, but it's kind of gives a, you know, makes you kind of answer something, you know. So now your main character here, like Logan Two Feathers, I believe. So yes. Who is Logan Two Feathers? Like who, what kind of a character is this person?
Logan is a space engineer who, as I say, I originally developed the character in the Joe Ballin series. And I was looking for a character who would be a kind of a space construction engineer. And I was thinking about, you know, who would kind of take on such a job. And I happened across a couple of articles talking about the American natives, the Native Americans, who basically had built all of the skyscrapers in New York. And kind of like they did these jobs and like they showed kind of no fear of heights and what have you. And I just thought to myself, wow, that's the kind of person I could imagine kind of like who'd be quite happy to go and start, you know, building things in space. And so that's kind of like how that character first came about. And then, as I said, through those books, he kind of developed more and more and became more and more solid. And so basically he's an engineer. He's very down to earth. He's a very, moral character. He's got a very, very dry sense of humor. And he's very, very loyal to like those around him, and he cares a lot, but he finds himself in this world where he's dealing with both bigotry from people who supposedly are his allies, but then he's also facing the fact that this planet that he found and helped to settle has been basically invaded by enemy soldiers. And so he's kind of literally sort of fighting for his life on many fronts. And so the whole story is quite a long kind of tale of heroism and a personal journey for the character.
And of course, a lot of you will be in that character. As most writers, they do put themselves into it. Do you draw from somewhere else as well to fill a character? As in, like, do you take other people you know, or other people you watch? You're hanging out in the coffee shop or the bar, and you're kind of looking at people and getting ideas, or does it just is this totally imagination?
It's kind of a mix of all of those, really. I mean, a lot of the kind of like the ideas and the personality of Logan certainly is reflective of, you know, certain aspects of my personality. Some of his personality is definitely kind of like derived from people I've met and people I know, and some of it is just kind of, you know, sheer imagination in terms of like you know, putting myself into that character's shoes and saying, well, you know, if I was in those shoes, how would I react? How would I feel to these circumstances? And so it is very much, you know, kind of an amalgamation of all of these different things.
Do you ever take people or run, you know, use people that are completely nasty, awful people that you've had running in your life, or people you don't like, and then you put them in the book and they get killed or tortured or something?
I've never deliberately put.
Oh, come on, give us the names. Tell us the truth.
I've never deliberately put a person in my book for the pure reason of being able to torture them.
Well, it's time you start.
But there are kind of, you know, characters in my books who are, you know, kind of like, shall we say, not very nice people. And, you know, certainly, you know, some of their character and personality is based on people that I've known that, you know, I've not liked.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it all informs, you know, the kind of choice, you know.
Do you actually try to act out or scene out some of the different things that are happening in the book? Do you kind of work it out in your brain, or maybe you dress up like someone and you do that sort of thing, or do you do any of that? Or, you know, I have to, because I get people that say they do. Some of them dress up, you know, they've got dresses on, they've got all sorts of stuff on. I think it's great, but how do you act out scenes, or do you?
I don't do any kind of dress up. I have to say. Yeah. Basically, for me, it's really kind of like all in my imagination. It's, you know, it's like I think I'm a reasonably fairly empathic kind of person. And so, you know, I sort of spend time sort of thinking myself, as I said earlier, you know, it's like I try to put myself in that person's shoes and that circumstance and think to myself, well, you know, how would I react? How would I feel? You know, what would I go through if I was in that circumstance? And how would I react? You know, what would I do? I mean, I also draw on things that I've seen and you know, things that I've been aware of from other people that I know, or like you said, sometimes just, you know, people that you might see in the street or in a coffee shop or something.
Right.
Yeah. You know, they all kind of like help to inform the choices of how you make a character, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Whole.
Yeah. In these last 5 years or so, there's been a lot of great characters to copy that you can get away with almost anything now, but because previously people would have said, well, that's unbelievable. But the way some people act, you might not. You could get away with more. Do you have a process in writing, like in a particular, and I mean this in setting, like do you have to be in a certain setting or placing or have certain things around you, music, no music, and do you have to be in the right mood? And that's important because, you know, can you just rope off time and say, well, there's nobody home 10 to 2, so I'm going to write and sit down and write? Is that all? How does that work for you?
I'm lucky in that I write full time, which I'm very glad about, because when I was working and trying to write, I didn't progress very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm lucky enough to write kind of full time. And so it literally is my job. I get up, you know, I kind of like have breakfast and what have you, and then I'm basically writing. It's like, but the thing is, I mean, writing isn't, it's not just putting words on paper. I mean, writing is a lot of different things. You know, there's research, there's promotion, you know, media, there's editing, advertising, all of these things. So it's not necessarily strictly just putting words down on a page. But in terms of the actual writing words itself, I basically have a weekly word target, which I try to stick to. And I don't always manage, but most of the time I do. I used to do daily word targets, but I found that was a bit difficult because you can never quite guarantee when things are going to strike. Or at least I can't.
Right.
So I have a weekly target and I try to stick to that. But as I say, I mean, it's like, it's not just purely the words themselves. It's not like you I'm sure you know yourself, you don't just kind of like knock out 50,000 words and then that's it. You know, it's, there's more to it than just an actual word count. So I try to write every day during the week. I try to take weekends off, although depending on deadlines and what's happening and release schedules, sometimes that doesn't happen. But that's what I try to do. And usually I'm kind of like writing at least sort of 2-3 hours a day.
What about mood? So if things are just not going well, I mean, in your outside life, sort of not the writing part, but, or, you know, you got this protest outside your door or something's going on and it's kind of just throwing your day off. Can you still, are you that type of guy that sits down and can still do it?
No, mood is definitely a factor. I mean, certainly, I mean, for me, with all of the kind of like the COVID when that was kind of like hitting us every day, you know, and every day it just seemed to be getting worse and worse and worse. I really kind of like found it difficult to concentrate on writing. Every time I tried to sit down to do anything, it's like my brain would be trying to get a grip on, you know, what was happening in the world. And so I found it very, very challenging at that point to kind of write with any kind of regularity. Things just kind of like outside the house, they don't tend to bother me too much. It's mostly kind of like what's happening in my brain that bothers me. So if it's noisy outside, it's like that doesn't tend to bother me. As I said, I used to write on the train, which was kind of like a packed commuter train, and yeah, that didn't really bother me. I kind of like, if I'm out and about and I've got some spare time, like I'm waiting for an appointment or something, it's like I'll write on my phone. So it doesn't have to be a particular setting or particularly quiet. I don't write with music. I know a lot of people do, but I'd find that kind of like too distracting. I'd be singing along with the songs. Generally it's like I'm not distracted that easily, but as I say, if there are things that are going on that are kind of occupying my brain, that really can be quite an issue. And especially over the last couple of years, it's been difficult to sort of like turn those things off.
Yeah, it's all over the place everywhere you go, you know, it's hard to get away from it. How do you like to interact with your fans or readers and with people and stuff? Like, do you have a website? What's your favorite social media? What's your way to connect?
I do have a website. My website's davidmkelly.com. And I'm on Facebook and Twitter. And they're probably the two best ways of kind of like reaching out to me if people want to. I've got a contact form on my website and people can always email me. I mean, I like hearing from fans. Like, I'd love to hear from them more. And one of the things that has been, you know, kind of really quite disheartening over the last couple of years is the fact that we haven't been able to do, you know, live events and get to meet people, you know, in person. So that thankfully is now starting to ease off. I did my first live event just a couple of weeks ago in sort of nearly 2.5 years. And it was like, wow, it's so nice to actually get out and meet people again.
Yeah, it's a change. Well, of course, we'll have everything up on our website too. People can find you one click and they can do, you know, whatever they need. And, you know, you want to give out your phone number too?
No, I think my wife would probably be a bit upset about that idea.
Yeah, it could be a problem, you know. So what's your, old science fiction or new science fiction? And for me, old science fiction is stuff like I'm an old guy. So I'm talking about stuff from, you know, the 50s and 60s and 70s, mm-hmm. even compared to modern day. Do you have a favorite?
Well, I kind of grew up on the older kind of classic science fiction, you know, Heinlein, Asimov, Clark, etc. So, I mean, that will always, you know, have a kind of like a special place in my heart. But I mean, there's a lot of good stuff coming out now as well. You know, I mean, like the Expanse series. I mean, that's a very good series. I very much enjoyed Old Man's War by John Scalzi as well. I liked the way that he kind of like flipped the whole kind of sci-fi war kind of concept around and turned it on its head. And then there's also the Murderbot stories by Martha Wells. Those are very good as well. So I kind of like both, you know, but as I say, I'll always have a soft spot for the classics.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing how some of the classics still hold, even though, it's kind of a, you know, far-fetched, like the ideas are just not real, but they still hold a lot of water today.
Yeah, indeed. I think, they were very much the trendsetters, and I've had occasions where people have, you know, have compared some of my stories and books to some of the kind of classic writers. And like, I find that incredibly flattering, you know, that they kind of like felt that they had a similar kind of quality to those books. And, you know, I mean, that to me is kind of like almost, the ultimate compliment.
Oh yeah. Well, that just means you're following some of the great sci-fi writers before, you know, you're holding up. That's great. You know, do you ever have white writer's block then? Do you ever get to where you can't write?
I sometimes get to the point where, because I said my approach is very kind of organic, I sometimes get to the point where I don't know exactly where to go next in the story. It's not kind of writer's block in a sort of traditional sense. It's more just kind of like, yeah, and my brain hasn't quite figured out which things it wants to do yet. And so what I actually do at that point is I'll actually just put that story to one side and start working on another one that's kind of like different, and let my subconscious work on the one that kind of like got a little bit stuck.
Wow.
Which is kind of quite a useful kind of like technique, because it kind of takes you away from the thing that's, you know, maybe causing some problems, but it maintains your productivity, which obviously is a definite bonus.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. You know, well, interesting conversation, and we're glad you came on the show. Now, the new book coming out on June 7th is book two of Logan's World, Quailin Shin, and Quailin Shin Dawn, sorry. And of course, our guest is the author, David M. Kelly. So thank you for being on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, Al. It's been a pleasure.
Tired of wasting time trying to decide what to watch on your streaming service? Go to our website and look for the Martino movie reviews.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.